Kowalski appeared in the closet doorway with the torn wrapper. He had repacked the remaining money neatly into two equal stacks, with one extra brick sideways across the top. Then he had bundled and folded the heavy plastic into a tidy package that was about half the original size and almost opaque. Reacher said, "Were you out sick the day they taught numbers, too?" Kowalski said nothing. "Because I wasn't. I showed up that day." Silence. "See, there are even numbers and there are odd numbers. An even number would make two stacks the same size. I guess that's why they call them even. But with an odd number, you'd have to lay the extra one sideways across the top." Kowalski said nothing. 50 is an even number, whereas, for instance, 49 is an odd number. "So what?" "So take the 10 grand you stole out of your pocket and give it to me." Kowalski stood still. "Make a choice. You want to keep that 10 grand, you'll have to beat me in a fist fight. If you do, then you'll want to take more. And you will take more. And then you'll run. And then you'll be on the outside, and Lane and his guys will come and shake the trees for you. You want it to be that way?" Kowalski said nothing. "You wouldn't beat me anyway."
"You think?"
"Demi Moore could kick your ass. I'm a trained man."
"Trained to do what? Swim? You see any water here?"
Kowalski said nothing. "The first punch will decide it," Reacher said. "It always does. So, who are you going to back, the runt or the big guy?"
"You don't want me for an enemy."
"I wouldn't want you for a friend. That's for damn sure. I wouldn't want to go with you to Africa. I wouldn't want to crawl up to a forward OP with you watching my back. I wouldn't want to turn around and see you driving off into the sunset. You don't know how it was." "I know exactly how it was. You left two men 300 yards up the line. You're disgusting."
"You weren't there.
You're a disgrace to the uniform you once wore." Kowalski said nothing. "But you know which side your bread is buttered, don't you? And you don't want to get caught biting the hand that feeds you, do you?" Kowalski held still for a long moment, and then dropped the bundled package and reached behind him to his hip pocket and came back with a banded sheaf of $100 bills. It was folded in half. He dropped it on the floor, and it resumed its former flat shape like a flower opening its petals. Reacher tucked it back in the open bale and heaved the bale onto the top of the stack, pulled the chain and killed the light and closed the door. The electronic lock clicked and beeped.
"Okay," Kowalski said. "No harm, no foul, right?"
"Whatever," Reacher said. He led Kowalski back to the living room and then detoured to the kitchen and glanced in at the office, at the computer, at the file drawers. Something about them nagged at him. He stood in the empty silence for a second. Then a new thought struck him, like an ice cube dropped down the back of his neck. "What trees are they shaking?" he asked.
"Hospitals. We figure whoever is back is get to be sick."
"Which hospitals?"
"I don't know," Kowalski said. "All of them, presumably."
"Hospitals don't tell anyone anything."
"You think?"
"You know what an ER nurse makes?" Silence for a moment. "I'm going out again," Reacher said. "You stay here." 3 minutes later, he was at the payphone dialing Pauline's cell. Chapter 45. Pauling answered on the second ring. Or the second vibration, Reacher thought. She said her name and Reacher asked, "You got a car?" She said,
"No."
"Then jump in a cab and get over to DeMarie's place. Lane and his guys are out scouting hospitals, looking for either Knight or Hobart. They don't know which one came back yet. But it's only a matter of time before they hit St. Vincent's and get a match on Hobart's name and buy his address. So I'll meet you there. We're going to have to move them." Then he hung up and flagged a cab of his own on 9th Avenue. The driver was fast, but the traffic was slow. It got a little better after they crossed Broadway, but not much. Reacher sprawled sideways on the seat and rested his head on the window, breathed slow and easy. He thought, no use fretting about what you can't control. And he couldn't control Manhattan's traffic. Red lights controlled Manhattan's traffic. Approximately 72 of them between the Dakota Building and Hobart's current billet. Hudson Street runs one way south to north below West 14th, so the cab took Bleecker and 7th Avenue and Varick. Then it made the right into Charlton. Reacher stopped it halfway down the block and made the final approach on foot. There were three parked cars near DeMarie's place, but none of them was an expensive sedan with OSC plates. He glanced south at the oncoming traffic and hit 4L's button. Polling answered, and Reacher said his name and the street door buzzed. Up on the fourth floor, the apartment door still hung open. Burst hinges, splintered frame. Beyond it were voices in the living room. DeMarie's and Pauling's. Reacher stepped inside and they stopped talking. They just glanced beyond him at the door. He knew what they were thinking. It was no kind of a secure barrier against the outside world. DeMarie was still in her cotton shift, but Pauling had changed. She was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. She looked good. Hobart himself was where Reacher had last seen him, propped up on the sofa. He looked bad, pale and sick. But his eyes were blazing. He was angry.
They're coming here?
Maybe, Reacher said. Can't discount the possibility.
So what are we going to do?
We're going to be smart. We're going to make sure he finds an empty apartment. Hobart said nothing. Then he nodded, a little reluctantly. Where should you be? Reacher asked him. Medically.
Medically? I have no idea. I guess DeMarie did some checking.
DeMarie said, Birmingham, Alabama, or Nashville, Tennessee. One of the big university hospitals down there. I got brochures. They're good.
Not Walter Reed?
Walter Reed is good when they get them fresh from the battlefield. But his left foot happened nearly 5 years ago, and even his right wrist is completely healed. Healed all wrong, but healed all the same. So he needs a whole lot of preliminary stuff first. Bone work and reconstruction. And that's after the malaria and the tuberculosis are taken care of. And the malnutrition, and the parasites.
We can't get him to Birmingham or Nashville tonight.
We can't get him there ever. The surgery alone could be over $200,000. The prosthetics could be even more than that. She picked up two brochures from a small table and handed them over. There were expensive graphics and glossy photographs on the fronts. Blue skies, green lawns, warm brick buildings. Inside were details of surgical programs and prosthetics designers. There were more photographs. Kindly men with white hair and white coats cradled mechanical limbs like babies. One-legged people in athletic vests braced themselves on sleek titanium struts at marathon start lines. The captions under the pictures were full of optimism.
Looks good, Reacher said.
He handed the brochures back. DeMarie put them exactly where they had been before, on the table.